Coming up in the next hour, we'll be hearing about some fairly unpleasant reading about Ireland. It is very strong stuff, I should warn you. Derek Scally of the Irish Times has been looking at it and will tell us more. Also, Joan Burton and Patrick Holohan, Governor of the Central Bank, on the way ahead in terms of investigating what happened in Anglo. Also, the SNA protests, which go ahead today. And in sport, Pádraig will bring us Pádraig Harrington, looking forward to the Irish Open, and Kildare captain Eamon Callaghan on the challenge of Dublin. That's the Morning Ireland in the next 60 minutes.
It's 8 o'clock on Wednesday, the 26th of June, and you're listening to Morning Ireland with Cathal McQuillia and Áine Lawler.
The news headlines. As further details of the Anglo-Irish Bank recordings emerge, attention has now begun to focus on what form a banking inquiry might take. A survey has found that people in Ireland are hardening their attitudes towards immigrants, and the National Lottery has confirmed that one of two winning tickets in the Euro Millions jackpot worth €188 million was bought in Ireland. The news in full from Brian Jennings.
Further details have emerged of exchanges between Anglo-Irish Bank executives. Transcripts of the recordings published in the Irish Independent since Monday have sparked public outrage. This morning, the paper says that on one of the tapes, as the bank is teetering on collapse, the then chief executive David Drum is heard laughing and saying, "Another day, another billion." The newspaper also quotes the former Taoiseach Brian Cowan saying yesterday that he was very surprised about the content of the recordings. Political attention is focusing on a banking inquiry and what form it might take. The Taoiseach Enda Kenny has said the inquiry would have to look into what he called the axis of collusion between Anglo-Irish Bank and Fianna Fáil. Dara Cailleary, Fianna Fáil TD for Mayo, described Mr Kenny's claim as false. Deputy Cailleary said it wasn't possible to have a banking inquiry established on a partisan basis and that his party wanted an independent inquiry led by a judge from outside the state.
An inquiry that can be organised, for instance, under the Tribunal Act 2005, where you can have an independent judge from outside the state with a set time limit, with set powers to come in and to do so in a transparent manner. Mm-hmm. And that bill, which is currently before the House, on which the Levinson inquiry on the UK was based into the phone tapping, we saw the success of that inquiry done quickly, done at very good value and reporting and huge effect.
The Nevin Economic Research Institute says it's possible to reach the government's deficit targets without making deep cuts to public spending. The trade union-backed think tank says an investment stimulus, additional taxation and using the savings from the promissory note offered an alternative route to restoring the public finances. Our economics correspondent Sean Whelan.
The Nevin Institute says a low economic growth outlook requires a growth-enhancing budget plan, one that will create more jobs and continue progress towards balancing the government books. It says the €3.1 billion budget adjustment should be reduced by the €1 billion savings from ending the promissory note arrangement. An additional €1.65 billion in tax should be raised from high earners, corporations and those with capital assets instead of cutting spending on health, welfare and education. And it says a €1.5 billion investment stimulus next year, funded by public, private and European sources, could produce enough tax-paying jobs and welfare savings to achieve the government's deficit targets.
The Dáil debate on the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Bill is due to resume this morning, with the first vote on the legislation not now expected until next week. The Seanad will begin debating the proposed legislation providing for a referendum on its abolition after it was passed by the Dáil last night. Our political correspondent, David McCullough.
Last week, the Dáil began debating the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Bill. That debate will continue for the rest of this week and resume on Monday when the first vote is expected on the legislation. The only criticism of the bill heard during last week's session was that it didn't go far enough. This week's sessions are likely to hear from those who feel it goes too far in providing for legal terminations in Ireland, particularly on the grounds of the threat of suicide. A number of Fine Gael TDs and senators have expressed reservations. Louth's Peter Fitzpatrick has told his local newspaper, The Argus, that while he has yet to finally make up his mind, he has to make sure he can live with his conscience. Meanwhile, after the Dáil overwhelmingly passed the legislation providing for a referendum on the abolition of the Seanad by 87 votes to 30, the Upper House itself will begin debating that legislation this morning, with the Taoiseach opening the debate.
Irish attitudes towards immigration are hardening because of the recession, according to the results of a survey. It found that the number of people opposed to any further immigration from third world countries has more than trebled. The research was commissioned by the Integration Centre, a non-governmental organisation that assists refugees and immigrants. The survey was carried out by the ESRI, and its authors say there has been a definite shift in attitude towards migrants as unemployment has increased. It found that before the downturn in 2002, just 6% of Irish people said no immigrants from poorer non-EU countries should be allowed. But by 2010, this had increased to 22%, 3.5 times the previous figure. The government will this afternoon announce a package of financial and other supports for survivors of Magdalen laundries. It will be based on recommendations of Mr Justice Quirk, who was asked by the Cabinet to devise eligibility criteria and other aspects of a non-adversarial scheme. The National Lottery has confirmed that one of the two winning tickets for last night's Euro Millions jackpot of €188 million was sold in Ireland. The other ticket was sold in Belgium. The winners will receive €94 million each. The National Lottery has not yet confirmed where in Ireland the ticket was bought. Now the time is coming up to 8:06. Today will be dry with sunny spells. Winds will be generally light. It'll become warm except in coastal areas with sea breezes. Highest temperatures will range from 15 to 20 degrees.
Time for Seven the Papers again from Caroline Murphy.
Why is it all so different in this country? Abroad, when financial scandal hits home, there tend to be criminal investigations, trials and ultimately imprisonment. But here, repeatedly, banking scandals have involved politicians and the wider public getting angry, shouting abuse at the bankers, and then everybody goes home. When the noise dies down, the money men simply go back to making money. We do things differently here. So says Michael Clifford in an analysis piece in the Irish Examiner this morning as the papers look at what's going to happen next. Well, for a start, says the lead story in the Irish Independent, there will be more tapes. We're told a separate batch of explosive Anglo tapes reveal what was really going on as executives scrambled to save the stricken lender. The paper says these tapes are being analysed by the Independent investigation team and they shed much new light on the hours ahead of the guarantee and the machinations involving bankers and politicians. They put politicians firmly in the spotlight, we're told, and a fourth senior Anglo executive enters the frame in these tapes for the first time. The paper, meanwhile, headlines just one thing we will apparently hear when those extracts from the tapes do come to light. Another day, another billion laughs Drum, is what it says. We're told David Drum is heard laughing with the senior executive about the hemorrhaging of funds from the institution hours before the government bank guarantee. But it's what's next from the government that makes the lead in the Irish Times and the Irish Daily Mail and also the front of the Irish Examiner. Kenny, I'll uncover truth behind axis of collusion is the headline in the Examiner piece. We're told the Taoiseach rejected calls for an independent bank probe and pledged that an Oireachtas banking inquiry would be set up in the autumn. The Irish Daily Mail, however, is sceptical. No bank inquiry until 2015, if we get one at all, is the headline there, while referendum may be held to boost powers for bank inquiry is the headline in the Times. There we're told the electorate may be asked to vote again to give more power to politicians to conduct formal inquiries if the planned Oireachtas inquiry into the banking collapse fails to get full cooperation from leading figures involved. Not the way to go, though, appears to be the belief of Miriam Lord in the Times. Writing about yesterday, she says, outside Leinster House, people are furious with the arrogant suits. Their laddish sniggering shocked the public, a public that considers itself unshockable after the economic turn of events of the last few years. Yet, God bless their innocence, many still turn towards the government to see what they would do about it. And what steps does the Taoiseach propose to take, she asks, before answering. It seems ENDA intends to play politics with this dispiriting situation, the way Anglo's rugger buggers played with our future. And she says of Mr Kenny's intention to use a parliamentary inquiry and moral authority, that'll put the wind up the bankers. ENDA holds the same sort of moral authority over them as the Catholic bishops hold over him. Was it moral authority, meanwhile, that Labour TDs used to get their minister to reverse some cuts to special needs education resources? That decision makes the lead in the Examiner today.
Quinn left red-faced as resources cuts reversed, is the headline. The resources, which will be available to compensate former residents of Magdalen Laundries, make the front of the Times. We're told details of a €25 million fund will be disclosed by Alan Shatter today. The fund, meanwhile, which will be available to that lucky Euro Millions lottery winner, makes news too. Reports on the Irish winner splashed all over the front of the Irish Daily Star, the Irish Daily Mirror and the Irish Sun. But finally, whoever that lucky winner is, they'll certainly have plenty of money for a tech detox should they feel the need. The Examiner tells us today that that is the latest craze. Wallpaper is apparently being developed to block Wi-Fi so that addicts can have phone-free rooms. Internet rehab holidays and retreat centres are springing up all over the States. And one Dublin hotel, we're told, even gives us the option of surrendering our phones on check-in. And in return, we'll be given a detox pack with a tree planting kit and a board game.
Imagine if you put that wallpaper up in your home and your children had to talk to you. Wouldn't that be amazing? All right, Caroline, thank you very much indeed. Morning, Ireland. It's 13 minutes past eight. Well, I read you that headline before the break. That's in Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. I think Derek Scally, the Irish Times correspondent in Berlin, has been tweeting it this morning. It's a pretty remarkable sentence, isn't it, Derek? Put the ex-Anglo executives in a sack with the last Irish government, the regulator, the central bank, then hit the sack with a club until the screams of pain are unbearable. We seem to have annoyed some people in Germany.
Well, it's remarkable on several levels. Number one, the Frankfurt Allgemeine would be, I suppose, an equivalent of the Irish Times in terms of it aims for seriousness, and the fact that it's losing the rag in this morning's paper gives an indication of how annoyed they are about this. And secondly, Ireland really, throughout the crisis, something that really has never really filtered through to Ireland. Ireland's actually had a fairly easy ride in comparison to the treatment of some other bailout candidates like Greece and Cyprus in the German media. And we had 6 months to the end of the programme and then this happened. And so Germans waking up this morning, opening their Bild tabloid newspaper, the front page headline is Irish broke bankers mock German customers. This is obviously a reference to the singing of the Deutschland, Deutschland über alles, which is the Nazi era first verse of the German national anthem, which really hasn't been sung for 60 years here. It's considered quite an insult to do that, whether intentionally or out of ignorance. And it's all setting up quite a storm as Michael Noonan continues negotiations this morning in Brussels, and Enda Kenny meets Angela Merkel here tomorrow.
Yes, it's interesting actually. The Financial Times, which is also paying us some attention, they have an editorial about what they call our depressing bankers this morning. But they say when Eurozone leaders decide about Ireland's bank debt, they shouldn't use the behaviour of a few reckless bankers as an excuse to punish an entire country. But is that the risk we run, that there will be political fallout from this as we try to still do a deal on our bank debt?
Well, this is exactly the issue, that Germany doesn't really pay attention to the small print of the Irish bailout, but all they know is that the Irish government has been telling them, we want European taxpayers via the ESM bailout fund to take stakes in Irish banks. Now, the revelations over Anglo-Irish Bank gives them a very convenient way to say, well, are you sure you really know what's going on in your banks? A German finance minister spokesman said to me yesterday, he didn't want to comment on the tapes directly, but he said it's quite clear that the events from 2008 to 2010 showed that it was gravely underestimated the risks in Irish banks then. So the feeling in Berlin and elsewhere would be, why should we be willing to put up our taxpayers' money to take stakes in your banks if only 5 years later what was really going on in Anglo-Irish Bank has come to the fore?
And there are no phone recordings of German bondholders going, get the money in, we have to make sure those Irish banks repay us so we don't feel the pain. The recordings are of our bank executives speaking and laughing in the way that they did.
Yes, I'm Spiegel Online, which is a very influential news website. It's the one that everyone at work clicks on during their breaks. They were writing that the tapes show the hubris that the bank managers felt even just before the downfall of their institution. And there's a terrible word circulating here today when they were criticising or making fun of the naivety of the German bondholders who are investing in Anglo after the bank guarantee. They're describing them as Scheißdeutschen, which I don't really need to translate. It's a very unpleasant term. And it just seems we've had such a relatively simple ride in the German media until now. The Bild-Zeitung had the kid gloves on when dealing with Ireland recently. As far as I remember, Ireland never made the front page throughout even the darkest days of the bank guarantee and the bailout. They saved their vitriol for Greece. It will be interesting to see in the coming days if they now have turned their lasers on Ireland.
And apparently more revelations to come, so they'll have more to write about. Thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning there. Derek Scally, the Irish Times correspondent in Berlin.
On the line now is Richard of the Business Sunday Business Post. Richard, good morning.
Good morning.
I suppose we all guessed that everything that has emerged here in the last couple of days was going to go down badly in Germany. The only surprise is that the reaction in the newspapers in Germany is, if anything, worse than people might have expected.
I think it is. Yeah, I mean, Der Spiegel magazine, you know, has had a bit of a go at Ireland, I think, in relation to the bailout, but nothing particularly bad, as Derek pointed out. And for a newspaper like the Frankfurter Allgemeine to have a go at it really does affect things. The answer to that has to be that if we'd actually had a proper inquiry, if we had actually made transparent and open conclusions and made findings against individuals, which we should have done by now, we'd be out the far side of all this. So the actual reality is that we're still at the very beginning of the process, and the Taoiseach is talking about setting up an inquiry now. So we still have all of that criticism to face at this very, very sensitive juncture when we're trying to get out of the bailout programme and improve the terms of what we've got so far.
And the difficulties begin with, maybe it's an opportunity, but certainly it's the difficult. The Taoiseach has a difficult job ahead of him when he goes to meet Angela Merkel, Chancellor Merkel, tomorrow. Anyway, let's move on to this question of an inquiry, when and if, and under what terms and conditions it might actually start. Before we get into this with you, Richard, let's talk to some people who have a particular interest in this. You may remember a report on the programme yesterday about the play Guaranteed, the topical play, which looks at the build-up to that night in 2009 of the bank guarantee. And in Blanchardstown last night at the Dreacht Theatre, the Minister for Social Protection, Joan Burton, was at that play along with another interesting guest from whom we'll hear in a moment. But Joan Burton, first of all, our reporter Petula Martin spoke to her and asked her what she thought of the Anglo tapes so far.
I have to say, I have been just shocked and appalled at the tone and at, if you like, coming back to something that is now some 5 years ago and listening again and reliving the kind of debate and what the country and what the then government did in relation to Anglo, because Anglo and Irish Nationwide cost $30 billion to bail out, and that's really what the country is still paying for. What struck me as well was we're listening to these tapes, and yet we've never heard, for instance, some of the people say who are currently front benchers for Fianna Fáil, who were members of that government. There's nothing to stop them coming out and actually telling us all exactly what happened. And I think it's really reignited people's absolute sense of frustration and anger that we still don't know exactly what led Fianna Fáil to the fateful decision that they made.
And people do want to know, as you say, but there are concerns among the opposition, particularly Fianna Fáil, that a banking inquiry by the Oireachtas would have limitations. Do you agree?
Well, there's a lot of work being done at the moment in relation to legislation to provide for a properly structured bank inquiry, which again will get to what I think people want to know. They want to know what actually happened. Now, quite a number of the leadership of Fianna Fáil in the Dáil can help the country hugely by just coming out and saying what actually happened, what was their role. In the play tonight, we're listening to the famous incorporeal, as it was called, cabinet meeting by telephone. Well, there's three or four people sitting in the Dáil on the Fianna Fáil benches, and the leader received that telephone call. Can he tell us exactly what happened in it? Can he find a mechanism to just come forward and say what happened and what did he know?
But in terms of a banking inquiry, you're saying you want Fianna Fáil to come out and say what they know in relation to it. But would that be enough? Is there not a need for an inquiry with more powers than an Oireachtas inquiry?
Oh, well, I think Fianna Fáil doesn't even need an inquiry to come out and say exactly what happened. They could volunteer to do that without an inquiry. Obviously, the government offered people a referendum in relation to Oireachtas inquiries. The people, in their wisdom, chose not to go down that route. So by the end of this current oil session, by the end of the summer, we will have legislation that will provide for an Oireachtas-based inquiry. I think we have to bear in mind that sometime next year, we hope that the court proceedings in relation to some of the parties involved in relation to offences under the Companies Act and various inquiries being carried on by the Office of the Director of Corporate Enforcement and the Garda queries, which are going on now for several years, the information that's available is that that's likely to come before the courts next year. I think it's important that, again, that happens, and again, that the people find out what actually happened.
On another banking matter, there's concern about confidentiality agreements by lenders. Should the banks not be telling us why they need these confidentiality agreements?
Well, I think that where the banks are engaging with people who have difficulties in relation to debt, that's going to be oversighted by the Insolvency Services of Ireland, and obviously also by the Minister for Finance. So I think that that's an issue that the banks, again, need to come forward and explain to people why they're doing that. Obviously, in quite a number of cases, confidentiality agreements actually protect debtors because debtors want their confidentiality respected. But equally, I think it's important that debtors have as much knowledge and as much detailed knowledge of the procedure, because it's only if they have the detailed knowledge that they can make the decision that's sustainable for them and that's best for them and for their family.
To your own portfolio now, how are you getting on in your attempts to persuade Fine Gael ministers not to cut welfare in the budget?
Well, I think that there was an agreement from early on in the life of the government in relation to both taxation and social welfare. I would make not just an argument about the 1.4 million people in Ireland who rely on social welfare for an income and their dependents, including their children. I would also make to my colleagues the economic argument that this is 20 billion that circulates into the Irish economy. In fact, it's the single biggest stimulus of all. And it's, if you think about it, there isn't a shop in Ireland, there isn't a street in Ireland with shops in Ireland where people who receive income support from my department don't go out and spend it. We're doing very well as a country on foreign direct investment. Everybody knows, though, the domestic economy and retail is not doing as well as we would like it to do. Social welfare is an enormous factor in keeping spending up, and that's really part of the discussion that I would be having.
Minister Joan Burton talking to Petula Martin, and she also spoke, Petula, to another very interested playgoer at last night's performance of Guaranteed, the play that is, in Dreacht last night, the Governor of the Central Bank, Patrick Holohan.
Can I get your reaction to the play Guaranteed?
Really enjoyed the play. It's humorous, but it's also very realistic, and there's great pace and excitement to it, actually, surprisingly, because we know the story so well. So I really thought it was a great idea for him to do it, and I think it pulled it off very well. I found myself, even though I know the story so well, I found myself tense through it and going through that time again, although I wasn't a participant. But I noticed a lot of people seemed angry.
There are calls for a banking inquiry. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think this is going to come. I'm actually looking forward to it.
And that's the Governor of the Central Bank speaking there to our reporter, Petula Martin. Richard Curran of the Business Post, Sunday Business Post, is still on the line. The Taoiseach says it's going to go ahead. The legislation to make it possible, or more possible at least, is going to go through the Dáil before the summer. And Patrick Holohan says he's looking forward to it. Are you? And if so, to what exactly and when?
Well, I'm not overly optimistic about, you know, the success or the ability of an Oireachtas inquiry to achieve, you know, what people would feel as a satisfactory outcome. The problem is that we seem to have got everything wrong at every step along the way. At the beginning of the crisis, there was a suggestion that there should be a High Court inspectorship, and I know that the Labour Party and Joan Burton were calling for that. But when the Gardaí went into Anglo-Irish Bank, they stopped and said, well, the Gardaí are there. And that's been a very long, difficult process with a very heavy burden of proof, which may have particular outcomes or may not. We had a commission of inquiry, which Patrick Honohan did part of, into the failure of regulation. But if you look at the main part of that commission, it had very, very strong powers. Set up in 2004, these guys could go into somebody's home with a search warrant if they felt that that person was withholding information or documentation. But they chose, under the Nyberg Commission, not to name anybody. They chose to grant full anonymity in the interviews that they were giving because they said that they were looking into system failure. They also did have the powers to make findings of fact against individuals, which emerged in the evidence, but they chose not to go down that road. So we failed there. That was an interesting but, you know, inadequate report. As we face into this process now, I think that the pitfalls of Oireachtas inquiries, notwithstanding the Abbey Lara judgment, and there are questions as to whether or not individual bankers and various other people will go to court and question how they're going to be treated by this inquiry, there is the problem that this could descend into a party political semi-farce. I mean, in one sense, you know, Fianna Fáil and their role in creating the financial monster boom and bust is well known and should be on the curriculum in schools. But equally, Joan Burton's suggestion that perhaps all of these Fianna Fáilers should come out and engage in a truth commission without the commission doesn't necessarily seems to me to tee things up for a party political slagging match. And that's not going to serve any good at this stage.
There is, I suppose, one possibility that remains, whatever about a commission and the limitations on it. Some of them, of course, imposed by the electorate when they rejected an opportunity to strengthen parliamentary inquiries, which, of course, don't cost anything. That's one of the, or cost practically nothing, one of the attractions. But they got the opportunity and they said no. But at least there is the prospect of putting people into the stocks, whether they're former ministers or former bank executives, and giving them a hard time. In other words, basically, how dare you? How could you possibly have done this? What possible reasons did you think of the effects and so on? That would be satisfying, wouldn't it, at least?
I think it might make a lot of angry members of the public feel good. The Germans might enjoy it as well. The question is whether it would provide answers that would be useful. And one of the difficulties with Oireachtas inquiries or Oireachtas hearings in general is often the news reports and the newspaper headlines are made up of the question that is asked rather than the answer. Now, I know that for a very serious investigation like this, it would be conducted on a more serious level and they would be trying to get answers. But I would feel at this stage that so many things have been gotten wrong in the process. This is really the last shot. This is the last crack. And we are better off to have this than not to have it at all. People deserve answers. There has not been a single forum, whether it be a civil court, a criminal court, a public inquiry, where people could read or see the version of events that a senior banker in any of the banks has about what happened. They have been deprived and denied that while taking a huge amount of austerity partially linked to that. Yes, the inquiry, if it goes ahead, and it should go ahead, will achieve that, but it isn't going to be what it should or could have been in finding answers and bringing true accountability.
And I suppose the final point, Richard, is, and the obvious point for probably everyone in the country, is there are criminal prosecutions pending against three executives in Anglo, and the Taoiseach said yesterday that the Gardaí had done their job about other matters, and the results of that have been, are with the DPP. The books of evidence, he understood, he said in the Dáil, are being prepared. That's really what people want, is they want to see more than anything else this tested in court.
Yeah, I think that, you know, a court outing in relation to it, where people, irrespective of the outcome, get an explanation, you know, as to what went on. But the other thing, Cathal, as well, is that Enda Kenny mentioned about, you know, the government and the relationship between Anglo and Fianna Fáil at the time. What about the relationship and level of knowledge that senior officials in the Department of Finance and in the Central Bank had? That is a very, very painful process that we have got to go through if we're going to get any kind of accountability or transparency.
And we should mention just one other word that I used in the Dáil yesterday, which certainly German note takers or online readers will have paid attention to, the Taoiseach talking about collusion, as he put it, an axis of collusion between Anglo-Irish Bank and Fianna Fáil. This is the previous Irish government. It's a very serious charge.
Was there collusion in relation to the Department of Finance? I'll give you one very simple example. Listen to the tapes about the $7 billion that Anglo was looking for from the Central Bank. Anglo-Irish Bank shares were still being traded. They were traded on the stock market for international investors to come along and buy or sell them. While the senior executives were down in the bank saying, we need $7 billion, we probably need more, the Central Bank was wondering, are we going to prop this bank up or not? It was clearly on the brink. And the shares continued to be traded in international stock by international investors for months afterwards.
All right. Well, 5 years on, there's still a lot of questions to be answered. Richard Curran of the Sunday Business Post, thank you.
Morning, Ireland. 23 minutes to nine. And Pádraig Lodge is back with more sports news.
Thanks again, Anya. Good morning. Well, the Leinster Council is confident of an attendance in excess of 50,000, the biggest of the championship so far, for Sunday's Leinster football semi-final between Dublin and Kildare. Meath face Wexford in the opening semi-final on the double bill. And the Kildare captain, Eamon Callaghan, has been telling our Gaelic Games correspondent Brian Carthy about the challenge of playing the Dubs.
You can notice this year that they've actually seemed to have improved. They have a very fit squad, very strong, you know, very pacey. They've really stepped it up a notch from last year, and you know, that's a worrying thing for us. But we've made changes ourselves with the personnel and the panel and that, and we have we've a new team ourselves from last year, so it makes for an interesting game.
As you say, you've made changes in personnel, Kieran McGeaney, since last year. You have several under 21 players in the squad. The same with Dublin. They've brought forward a good few younger players.
Yeah, I think that's the way the game has gone. You know, like, youth is a great thing to have, and especially I can speak on behalf of the Kildare lads. You know, the group that we have now that came through are very, very hard working. You know, they've got great mindset and great attitude towards the game, and that's a massive thing with younger lads. You know, you don't find it too often, and I think we're very lucky that this year we got so many of them at the one time.
What's it like, your own role as captain? Obviously you've got to concentrate on your own game, but I'm sure, or have you to be conscious as well of the younger players coming in and making them feel comfortable and part of a team?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I remember when I came in, I think it was Glenn Ryan or Anthony Rainbow was captain, and you know, they were brilliant for me, and I learned a lot from them, and I'd be just hoping to kind of pass on whatever knowledge I have over the years I've been playing. I sound old actually now playing, but I'd be one of the more experienced lads in the team now, so it's you know, my turn to kind of pass on whatever knowledge I have of the game to them, and make sure that they're in the best possible shape.
In relation to playing Dublin, you wouldn't see it as an opt-out afterwards to say, we've a very young team, we're bringing through players. Is there pressure on Kildare now to deliver something under Kieran McGeaney?
Yeah, definitely. Like, we have to I think we have to. That's the one thing that's missing in Kildare. You know, we've been very consistent over the last 5 years, getting to quarter-final stages and that. But the one thing that's missing is a bit of silverware, and that's the goal this year. That's the aim, as it has been for the last years. But it's definitely something that, you know, the years are running out for a few lads. So we'll definitely have to put a bit of pressure on that on ourselves to deliver that this year.
That's Eamon Callaghan. The cabin manager Terry Hyland has selected an unchanged starting 15 for Saturday's Ulster football semi-final against Monaghan in Clonus. But on the hurling front, Richie Foley and Pádraig Mahoney have been included in the Waterford team to play Westmeath. And RTÉ has announced that this week's Sunday game has been extended to include coverage of all 16 championship matches this weekend. The programme will start at 8:30 and will run until 10:40. Des Cahill tells us that it'll be the longest ever highlights edition in the programme's 34-year history.
Well, if Des says so, it must be true.
That's no doubt about it. It's a busy night of underage Gaelic Games action in the Bord Gáis Energy Leinster under-21 hurling semi-finals. Carlow play Wexford in Dr. Cullen Park, and it's Offaly versus Kilkenny in Tullamore. In the Electric Ireland Munster minor hurling semi-finals, Cork face Waterford in Porcupine, and Semple Stadium is the venue for Tipperary against Waterford. In rugby, Melbourne Rebels wing Lachlan Mitchell has received a one-match ban for foul play during yesterday's game against the British and Irish Lions. Mitchell was found guilty of lifting Lions wing Simon Zebo and dropping him to the ground. This time tomorrow, the Irish Open Golf will be underway at Carton House, with large crowds expected each day. Once again, there is no title sponsor this year, but Padraig Harrington, who's an unofficial ambassador for the event, has revealed that he's in discussions with a potential sponsor, and he's confident of a successful outcome.
I constantly work on trying to find a sponsor for this event. I actually think it's got to be the best value in any marketing budget in the world. Obviously, this event has some good backing as it is, and for a title sponsor to come in on top of that, considering the coverage they get worldwide, the Golf Channel in the States, you know, it goes out in South Africa, goes out in Asia, goes out in Europe, it goes out in Britain. You know, this is genuine worldwide coverage in a beautiful setting. For you got to be getting a good bang for your buck this week, let's say. So when I'm out there, I talk to sponsors who are interested in golf and mention, you know, that this is a good event to get involved with. And certainly I've had a couple and one of good interest lately that, you know, would certainly look at going forward with it.
And can you elaborate at all of this?
Oh, no, it's too early days for that sort of stuff. But I have in the past tried to get one or two over the line. But this one is early days, but probably could be more promising in that sense.
Sounds good. That's Greg Allen speaking to Padraig Harrington, who'll be hoping to maintain his good form on the Montgomery course at Carton House. Carlos Tevez is to undergo a medical at Juventus today, with the striker's four-year spell at Manchester City about to end. The move will go through provided Tevez passes his medical and agrees personal terms. Goalkeeper Simon Mignolet will become the first Belgian to play for Liverpool after the Anfield club announced his signing. The 25-year-old joins from Sunderland. The Spanish FA has denied newspaper reports in Brazil which claimed that the Spanish team had been involved in a drunken party at the team hotel after their win over Uruguay in the Confederations Cup, although it did confirm that players had money stolen from their rooms. The Irish men's hockey team drew 4-4 with Canada at Belfield. Anna O'Flanagan scored a hat-trick, while Nikki Simmons marked her 201st Irish cap with a goal. In tennis, Serena Williams is through to the second round at Wimbledon after a comfortable straight sets win over Luxembourg's Mandy Minella. There were no problems either for the men's top seed Novak Djokovic. And having recently returned from Australia, jockey Bobby Molloy was in the winner's enclosure at Ballinrobe last night on board Rodeo Rocket in the handicap hurdle. The win was his first in Ireland for 2.5 years and comes a fortnight after the arrival of his baby son Jack.
Ah, thanks very much indeed, Padraig. Now, Education Minister Rory Quinn has backed down on the controversial 10% cut to support hours for children with special education needs. But parents are still saying they'll go ahead with planned protests across the country because they're concerned about hidden cuts in service. Our education correspondent Emma O'Kelly joins us. Emma, the minister has apologised for any anguish caused to parents, but we do know that, you know, despite the fact that he's reversed on this cut, the demand for special needs assistance is rising. The 20 million that he's got there has to be found within the education budget, and many parents still fear there'll be less time and less help for a child that needs more than other kids.
Yes, parents are still very concerned and were very concerned yesterday evening. There are two issues here. There is the issue of resource teachers, who are teachers who cater for the educational needs of children with significant disabilities. On the other side, there are special needs assistants. Now, who cater for the care needs of children with disabilities. These could be children, for example, with a physical disability. That means they need support in toileting, or children who have emotional difficulties or behavioural difficulties that may cause them to be disruptive in class. So what Rory Quinn announced yesterday referred to resource teachers. He rode back on cuts that were due to be implemented this September. Cuts, I have to say, that came on top of cuts over the past 2 years that are still in place. But on the issue of SNAs, special needs assistance, there is great concern. At the same time that these cuts to resource teachers were announced last week, there was also an announcement related to special needs assistance. What has happened there is that the number of children requiring SNAs has increased by 10%, from 20,000 children to 22,000. And the assumption was at the time last week that this would automatically lead to an increase in demand for special needs assistance. Now, the government came out very, very strongly yesterday, the Department of Education, saying, no, that is not the case. Just because there is a 10% increase in children needing the service, that does not correlate to a 10% increase in demand. And they put that demand at more to around 1.5%, and they say they can cater for that demand. But this was hotly disputed, for instance, in the Doyle yesterday by Fianna Fáil. They called the government's argument a pretense. Also, the parents of special needs children dispute this. They say there are an additional 2,000 children who will be in the system next year who need special needs assistance, and they absolutely feel that that means that the slices of the cake, shall we say, will be smaller. One word that Rory Quinn used in the Doyle repeatedly was the word access. He said no child who needs access to an SNA will be denied it. Now, parents worry about that word because they say, what does access mean? Does that mean there will be an SNA in the classroom where my child is? You know, what does that boil down to in terms of individual care?
Let's hear from the parents, Emma. Here's Eleanor McSherry. She's policy officer with the Special Needs Parents Association. And she's explaining here why they believe the minister's moves on reversing the cuts they'll welcome are not enough, and they'll still be going ahead with their protests.
The thing about it is that the minister's constantly going on about that children have access to SNAs. And this isn't the correct way of looking at it. Children have to be able to have an SNA for their needs. These children have care needs, which we are constantly being told by the department is the most important part, so they can access education. But they are not been able to access education because their care needs are not being addressed. At the moment, every time these things happen, we come out, we speak about it, and we're not heard. Now, for the first time, the minister has listened. So we want to build momentum on that. We want him to listen to all of our issues, not just one issue that was more inconvenient because the INTO were willing to stand up. For the first time, the teachers were willing to stand with us. Now, we have plenty of teachers who are saying they're still willing to come out on the streets with us because they're not happy with all the other cuts and cutbacks that have come in this particular area.
Just in terms of that reference to the INTO official protest has been cancelled, although some teachers may be turning out on today's protests in an individual capacity. I suppose, Emma, what this all boils down to, if this is to be resolved, is what the true scale of the demand is. You know, it was grand when there was money to go around to pay for these things, but now that there are cuts, you know, a rise in the demand for resource teachers by 12%, a rise in the demand for special needs assistance by 10%, the department saying, you know, the real need is only a tenth of that. How can that get sorted out? What's going on there?
Yes, Rory Quinn is concerned by what he called in the Doyle last night, the scale of the surge in demand for resource teachers, for example. He said he wanted to know the underlying causes. He's established a working group to alter the model of allocation, but it will also be looking at why. Now, it's difficult to know. I mean, he said there had been a 25% increase in demand over the last 4 years, even though the population in schools had only grown by 5%. So that's a big difference. Now, obviously, you have that population growth. You also probably have a lot more diagnosis going on, that children who perhaps, you know, in previous years may not have been diagnosed are being diagnosed. But there also would seem to be some kind of an implication in there that perhaps children are accessing these services who perhaps don't require that. And that is an implication that would be, again, most strongly disputed by parents and many teachers as well. I mean, parents, and I've spoken to so many of them, they see that these supports can make such a profound difference in a child's life, not just in their education, but in their life entirely. And parents and teachers would say it is really, really difficult to get access to these services. So they would dispute that there's some sort of, children who perhaps aren't entitled to it getting it. Another point that Rory Quinn made in the Doyle, which is important because of the sort of political row that's around this, is he said that, of course, this cap on the allocation of these SNAs and resource teachers had, of course, been introduced by Fianna Fáil when they were in government. And he pointed out that the current government is simply implementing an agreement made by Fianna Fáil.
Yes, but if the whole thrust is you know, in education at the moment is doing more with less, you know, I suppose people on, you know, the parents would argue these are a group of kids that, you know, you can't apply that formula that simply to them. Also, the context in terms of the rest of the class is larger class sizes. Yes. So that, yes, you know, the whole policy of integration does need some support here, doesn't it, if it's going to work?
It does. This is a phrase that Rory Quinn has used again and again, and he used it last night. We have to do more with less. Again, parents would say, well, look, you know, when it comes to children with care needs or with educational needs such as these children, that's not possible. And they would point out that this, if these resources aren't in place in a classroom, of course the burden falls back on the mainstream class teacher. If you don't have the SNAs and the resource teachers that an individual child will need, well then the slack has to be picked up elsewhere. So they, again, parents argued that this is an issue for all parents because all children in a class suffer. Now, on top of that as well, Rory Quinn, in relation to the reversal of the cut, which dealing with resource teachers, Rory Quinn said that because he's reversing this cut, this will have budgetary implications down the line. So again, there are concerns around that. If the money has to be found for these additional resource teachers, will, for example, class size grow? And again, many people arguing yesterday that that amounts to the same thing. It amounts to fewer staff catering for classes.
All right, Emma, thank you very much indeed. Our education correspondent, Emma O'Kelly, 9 minutes to nine.
We spent a lot of time earlier on talking about billions in banks, or rather not in banks. We're now going to talk about millions in the Euro Millions lottery, and specifically a question. It's not the most important question of the morning, but still go on. You'd like to know who won that €94 million, particularly if you're from Sallins, County Kildare, for example, one of the places where it is thought, it is rumoured, the winner might just have come from, and our reporter Justin McCarthy is on the trail. Justin, since we spoke to you last, any news?
Well, Cathal, there's been certainly a lot of excitement down here in Sallins. I'm here at Riley's Super Value in Sallins, just on the outskirts of the town, opposite the train station. And a lotto fever has hit this town last night when rumours began circulating on social media websites that the Super Value here had sold the winning ticket. Now, the jackpot was €187 million, and Lotto headquarters would only confirm that somebody from Ireland won half of that. So it's in the region of €94 million that somebody is going to take home with them. We still don't know who it is. But staff here this morning were convinced that the rumours were true and that their shop had sold the winning ticket. And certainly there was plenty of excitement when I spoke to the manager here, Yevgeny Borishuk.
Oh, Jesus, there's loads of excitement in the shop this morning. No one knows, still no one knows who it is, but we're just waiting for somebody who's going to come in and check a ticket.
Tell me about the buzz coming up to the Euro Millions draw. Did you have many customers playing the lotto at that time?
Yes, we actually did. Loads of customers were talking about it actually on that night as well, especially in the evening. A lot of customers bought it, and do you know, I'd say everyone is kind of was hoping to get something, but we actually had previews. Two weeks ago, one of the lads won 2,000, I think, Sean, and he works in our shop. And there was one customer, I remember, it was a big win as well for 500,000. There was another, I think, lady bought it. She was just passing by and bought it in our shop in Super Value in Sallins.
And that's Yevgeny Borishuk, manager of the Super Value shop in Sallins. The obvious question, Justin, is there anybody not around this morning that people would have expected to be around normally?
Well, the staff here have been, I mean, all the customers coming in and out of the shop, it's been on their lips who won the lotto last night, who is the new multi-millionaire. Now, since I spoke to Yevgeny, I spoke to one of the supervisors in the shop who they had been trying to contact Lotto headquarters all morning to find out if it was them. Now, we've all heard the Lotto catchphrase, it could be you. But apparently, since I spoke to Yevgeny, Lotto headquarters have told Riley's Super Value here in Sallins that it's probably not you, and that it's what they've told the staff here is that the winning ticket was sold in a shop in the Leinster area. But the Super Value here now are saying that they don't believe that it was sold in Riley's. So the hunt goes on to find out where that ticket was sold and who might be waking up this morning as a new multimillionaire.
All right, Justin McCarthy in Sallins, thank you very much. Well, one person who's not in that shop this morning, people have been wondering why, maybe there's a perfectly reasonable explanation. He can tell us himself now. Fergus Riley, owner of the Super Value shop in Sallins, good morning.
Good morning. You all well this morning?
We're all well. How are you well?
We're good. I was on my way to collect a generator for barbecue on Saturday with a summer barbecue for our customers, and their phone has just happened since about the win. And I suppose what we say is it could be anyone. We heard Larry Corbett was supposed to win the Euro Millions a few weeks ago, and please God, it is someone in Sallins. Like, the rumour is still going that it's someone in the catchment, but we don't know. We don't know. And we, all we do is wish whoever has won it lots of happiness from their big win.
But it's not you.
It's not me anyway. No. I'm here trying to lift a generator into Buttermilk car to for our barbecue on Saturday for our customers for summer barbecue, and it's definitely not me anyway. But I did ring the shop this morning to see where everyone at work, because we do a syndicate of work, and they're all there, so I don't think it's any of us that's the winner anyway.
Well, you've just burst a balloon, but at least anyway you've clarified something for us, and we know how you're not there. It's not you. Maybe another day. But thanks very much for talking to us.
No problem. Okay, wish the best to whoever did win it.
Indeed. 2 minutes to 9.